The views and opinions expressed by A Little Bit Culty are those of the hosts and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the podcast. Any content provided by our guests, bloggers, sponsors, or authors are of their opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, group, club, organization, business, individual, anyone, or anything. Welcome to A Little Bit Culty, a podcast about what happens when something that seems like a great thing at first goes to the dark side and takes you with it. I'm your host, Sarah Edmondson.
And I'm also your host, Anthony Ames, a.k.a. Nippy. Sarah and I met, fell in love in a, quote, self-help organization that turned out to be a mega cult called Nexium. Heard of it? We got out of there together, and on our way out, we helped shut it down. Our journey as Nexium whistleblowers was captured in detail on a docuseries called The Vow on HBO, and also on the front page of a newspaper.
New York Times, babe.
Right.
Have you heard of it? Each week on A Little Bit Culty, we talk with other former cult members and whistleblowers, plus experts in things like cultic abuse and coercive control.
We also turn the mic over to advocates and clinicians with wisdom to share on recovering from everything from MLMs and toxic religion to bad romances with raging narcissists.
There's always something to learn about the cultiverse. Be sure to subscribe to A Little Bit Culty so you don't miss an episode of littlebitculty.com. Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Part two with our chat with Will Allen, the director of Holy Hell, a documentary that chronicles the culty-culty world of Buddhafield. And if you didn't listen to part one yet, you're going to want to back on up and do that before you listen to this episode. And if you haven't seen Holy Hell yet, and you like homework, which seems like our listeners like the homework, we'll give you a gold star or a scratch and sniff sticker for watching Holy Hell as a companion piece to these episodes. Not really, though. It'll be like a pretend gold star scratch and sniff sticker. But visualize it in your mind.
A like button's good enough, don't you think?
A like button, yeah, just like it. You know, like, subscribe, and share. Give us a review. But no, in all seriousness, one thing I really loved about Buddhafield is I really did feel, similarly to The Vow, it really showed, I think, what drew people in, what was good and magical about it. And this week, I forget how it came up. Oh, I know why. Jess called me from Walmart, and she was, you know, just chatting with me and saying, oh, I'm in Walmart. Yeah. And all of a sudden, like, this happens a lot, right? Where a memory comes back from our time in Nexium, which is largely like there's just these big blocks of like, I don't know what I was doing for 2 to 3 years. And it reminded me of that field trip we took to Walmart. Do you remember?
I did.
So this was for a program called The Source. It was an acting program that was mostly just
bullshit level, DEFCON 5.
Sorry, I couldn't help myself.
Having
it was
fun,
just
Sarah?
Just a regurgitated, like, different exercises from other, like, I mean, I have my BFA, also known as a Bachelor of Fuck All, in theater performance, and I've been in acting classes for like 2 decades. So a lot of it was just regurgitated things pulled from other places. But one exercise that was actually really fun and hard was that we were doing this thing called the anti-face or the anti-face, where like that you take your tendency, like my tendency is I'm very smiley, I'm very personable, I like to connect. So I had to do the sort of the opposite of that and build a character. Instead of being like this happy person that I am, I had to take the antithesis of that, which was this sort of like grumpy, bitchy, like shut down emotionally. And then you had to go into...
So basically me. You had to be me.
We had to... this was the irony. So I had to walk into Walmart. I had to buy something. So I was looking for earplugs and I walked in. I wish the listeners could see my face, but I had this like total frown on my face and was like, where's the earplugs? Where would I find the earplugs? Versus like if it was me, I'd be like, oh, excuse me. Do you mind telling me which aisle I'd find the earplugs? Like that's just probably to a fault. Like I'm annoyingly positive, right? Even to the point where I was trying to do my anti-face and then afterwards I'd be like, I'm so sorry. I'm not being rude, but like I'm just doing an acting exercise and I'm actually really a nice person. And then I'd like walk around Walmart. We were there for at least an hour and I'd pass Nippy and he was walking up and down the aisles, like bouncing, like with a total spring in his step, not his normal pelvis forward, I'm a football player guy. And he was bouncing up and down with a spring in his step, like Ned Flanders, and just being like, hi, everybody. Hi, how are you? having a good day, finding what you're looking for. It's just like really bright eyes and super perky. So,
and then afterwards, I was like, listen, I'm really not a nice person. I'm a curmudgeonly asshole. where the fuck are the tube stocks?
That was an exercise that I thought was like really interesting and kind of fun.
Yeah. We laughed.
We laughed. And I think it sort of pointed out how we rely on certain, you know, physical traits about ourselves to maneuver in the world. So that was the awareness we got from that exercise. And I hope that brings you awareness too.
All right. Okay, then. I'm going to keep on trucking here. And
oh, quick tangent. Nippy and I love seeing how you guys like to listen to A Little Bit Culty while doing other things. And many of you have put in your stories, you living your life, folding laundry, working out, painting incredible works of art with A Little Bit Culty in the background. So we thought we'd do a little contest. Please share you living your life. And here's the deal. We have a very special gift for you. See, what happened was I'm packing up, moving for this trip to Atlanta, and I found a big bag of beautiful V-Week shirts. Those are the t-shirts that we got during Vanguard Week over the years. And I don't think I want to bring those to Atlanta. They just don't pass the Marie Kondo test for me. They do not spark joy. But for those hardcore NXIVM fans out there, maybe they spark joy for you. So we are going to run a little contest on A Little Bit Culty Instagram. Please tag us in your stories, listening to A Little Bit Culty, and we will give all the t-shirts away to those who post the best videos. Cannot wait to see what you come up with. I really hope that you enjoy these t-shirts. They certainly are stunning. There's a beautiful array of colors, and you don't have to wear it. You could even burn it or just put it in your NXIVM collection. You'd be surprised. This is truly historical items. In fact, there's a real desire in the museum community. There's going to be a collection of NXIVM and other cult-related historical items from other cults in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee at Alcatraz East, including the original New York Times article, some t-shirts, some photographs. So there is a real desire for these items, but they can be yours, dear listeners. So send us your stories, show us how you like to listen to A Little Bit Culty, and a V-Week t-shirt from 2005 to 2016 can be yours. Yes, guys, dreams do come true. Can't wait to see what you put together.
On that note, part two, Will Allen.
Reminder, we do care about your well-being. Again, if you or anyone you know needs support, please go to our show notes, and we've included many resources to help you.
All right. Keep on trucking. Keep on trucking, sister.
Part two of our chat with Will Allen. Will you say it in your Ned Flanders way?
Okay. Keep on trucking. Here's part two of our chat with Will Allen.
Under the surface, the water fills my lungs. This ground I worship has swallowed up its young. And you give for a promise I can't keep. Just like a game of hide and seek. The secrets in the silence when you scream. Sinking down.
Nippy, remember when we were doing the prenatal classes together? I was pregnant with Ace.
Yeah, we don't have to
try. I just think it's funny, but they put us under that blanket and we're supposed to stare at each other. They called it the hot box of love. You know, like we were just staring at each other and it was very loving and it was intense. And I loved it because I'm always like, let's connect. And like, you know, and you're
it's confronting. It's confronting because anything that's in there, especially when this guy, anyone, you know, if you don't want them, someone looking and they think they see everything, it gets very confronting.
Yeah. But like, that's something you can do with your partner is you can go under a blanket and create the hot box of love. But like, you shouldn't do that with a teacher.
At a volleyball game.
At a volleyball game or in a ballet class or at a yoga retreat or anywhere. So yes, boundaries. And I think we're actually going to do a whole episode on boundaries down the road.
A lot of my stuff, Will, and kind of unpacking the whole thing and what happened is resetting my boundaries.
How did you learn what your boundaries were?
I said a couple episodes, like, you don't know how much pain you're in until you're out of it. You don't know how your boundaries have been crossed until you kind of reclaimed them. Even just taking the 5-day and being open and vulnerable with like what's going on with me and trusting that since the beginning is something that instinctively I was like, I'm not sure if I should do this, but I trust this group. I can do this. I have kind of just been like, I'm not really going to do stuff like that anymore. You need to demonstrate to me first how much I'm going to share with you is kind of where I am, as opposed to mm-hmm. leading that in a lot of ways. And that's kind of where I am now, and maybe that'll change, but I just feel more comfortable dipping my toe in, getting more intel.
We're not supposed to do anything we're not really comfortable with. And even me making a movie or Sarah and you guys coming out, that never should happen until you're really ready for that to happen. And so you're never late. You're never late yeah. coming to it either. It's just like, it'll come when you come, but you are mm-hmm. you are kind of going there with yourself, and you kind of guide yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the comfort thing is so key, like you said, like learning to say no if something doesn't feel right. That got undermined with us right from the beginning because for we sure. were taught that that feeling meant that we were growing, right? And that we had to embrace the discomfort. In fact, comfort was the enemy in NXIVM. We were like, if someone chose comfort over their growth, they were weak. They were not ready to grow for the straight path. Like, it was like comfort, like, oh, Sarah's choosing comfort. You know, Will's very, very comfortable yeah. right now. Like, oh.
Yeah, sleep.
Yeah, sleep. That is a boundary for me, is setting what I uh-huh. need to be okay, to be comfortable, and to say no if I don't want to uh-huh. do something.
Well, you know what else I learned? And this is something funny. I think you might enjoy it, but you know, here we were, all of us in our group, always giving each other satsang, which is like, if you're in your mind or you're having a hard time, well, it's okay. It'll go away. Just meditate. Stay here. Tomorrow's a better day. You know, this is all part of the process. Okay. We kept each other there forever. We all kept each other there. Every time we wanted to go, every time a red mm-hmm. flag came up, no, you're fine. You're fine. You're fine. So here we are. The group blows up. We're all misguided, misdirected. We were all lost, came out of it. And me and my best friends, you know, I went around the world. I did whatever I wanted to do. I wasn't asking permission, you know. But when it came down to it, all of my friends, we all looked at each other and said, we are not telling each other what to do. We are not giving unwanted advice. If you want advice about what you want to do, call me. I would love to talk to you about it. I am not offering you free advice. Mm-hmm. Guess all we ever did is what friends mm-hmm. do, is they give mm-hmm. you free advice. Mm-hmm. But you really, yep. really shouldn't be giving each other advice. We all have to have permission to explore. And that's the only permission we really need. And so we kind of freed ourselves up from it, like, oh, I can't believe what you're doing. And how, that's not spiritual. And oh my yes. God. And what? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just said, no.
Yes.
That's great. It's great. You guys established that boundary right away.
That's a good reminder. And also I'll use this opportunity to apologize to any of my friends out there who I coached when all they wanted was someone to listen. So, and Nippy and I have certainly had to like, I'll be like, wait, do you want me just to listen or you want like advice? I have to do that all the time because I would instantly go into coach That's mode. Right. Like, let me help you. Yeah. Let me come up with options and let's figure out how, you know,
Let's solve the problem.
You caused this and how you're going to fix it. Solve it. Yeah. So that's like, that's a really good reminder. Mm-hmm. And how else would you say, like, have you been healing? And what kind of advice would you give to people?
I imagine this is how it is for everyone, is you must throw the bathwater out, you know, mm-hmm. or the baby out yes. of the bathwater. Yes. And that's hard. It's hard to do without throwing all of the water out, right? So I think I threw all the water out. And I wanted to start over. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to really explore what was real, what wasn't real, what was mine, what wasn't mine. What do I feel? You know, when I got out of the group originally, like the first week or two when I was in LA, in Hawaii, I really felt this sense of like, I can do anything I want to do now with my life. And I hadn't a clue. I didn't know what I felt. I didn't know what was important to me. I had given so many desires up. I had given so many dreams up. I'd disqualified so many of my thoughts and my feelings. You know, I've been undermined so long. I didn't know. And I thought, well, Will, you're just going to figure it out. You're going to go and try things and you're going to learn what you like and what you don't like. And that's what I'm doing still.
Oh, that's amazing.
I think we're all doing
that's
that.
Great. Yeah.
And
that's great.
And so it's self-discovery. If I find something I don't like, I don't do it again, you know, whatever.
That's so key. I don't know if it's been as useful for you as it is for us, but like even just meeting you 5 years ago or 4 years ago when we first got out in LA, thanks to Mark Vicente who introduced us.
Which I want to get into at some point.
I have a picture with us.
Yes. Can you send that to me? I'd love to post it when we do this episode. You don't have to do it now, but it was just so meaningful for me to... I don't think you were there, Nippy, right? Like I'd gone by myself to shoot something.
Wasn't.
And just, you know, meeting you.
We're in Venice.
Yeah, we were in Venice just to feel like that we weren't alone. Because I think that your film was really the beginning of a whole, you know, slew of what we now call the golden age of cult awareness, right?
Because it was so well received and the people weren't punished for their experience.
Yeah.
That was so important.
It's so important. And people weren't like looked at as crazy and, you know, whatever for getting involved in the first place. It was like, it really honored that human experience. But I just felt so good to connect with you and to feel like, you know, that we weren't alone.
You understood.
Understood, yeah.
You were right in the middle of all the media blitz at the time. You were right in the middle of it.
Yes. Yes.
It just came out, New York Times and everything.
Yes, yeah. I don't think that, and The Vow hadn't come out yet.
No, you hadn't made it yet.
Nope.
You were just starting.
Yeah. Well, you had a question about Mark V, Nip.
Well, no, this is actually going there. How'd you guys connect? And then what was it like hearing Mark's story? And then how were you able to guide him? And, you know,
I'm not going to say anything Mark hasn't said, but he found my film, you know, independently. He wasn't, he remembers saying like, I don't think I want to watch a movie about this. But then he started watching it. It's like, oh my God, this is us. This is us. This is us. Oh my God. So he had the kind of revelation, like, this is what I'm experiencing. And he saw our resolve with it. And he found me. He was at a party and he met my producer. Her name is Allie Jones. She's amazing. And she was my producer, helped get it all out there. They met each other and they knew each other. And so he's like, I've got to talk to you. So I was working on the Leah Remini show. I was doing the second season of Cutting, helping cut.
Oh, wow.
And then he came by my office, or came by where they were over in Burbank. And I came out and I met him and Bonnie and one other person. And they just told me what happened. They told me, they tried to download exactly what happened. And they're like, you know, he talked about What the Bleep. And I, you know, knew that movie, of course, because I had your role. I was like filming like you were filming, and I was filming like you were filming, and I was making him important like you were making him important. And, you know, I want to talk about this. I want to, there's people still in it. And he has kind of brought the whole thing to me. He goes, they know I'm talking to you. He's afraid right now because I'm talking to you, you know? So you guys were all still in the middle of it. You know, they were, it was all hiding and nothing had been exposed yet.
Oh, wow.
And when he told you what he told you, did you immediately know like what you were looking at, what he was saying?
Well, I didn't. I didn't. Because first he said it was like a BS and BSD. How do you say it?
BDSM.
Thank you. He goes, I got into a BDSM cult. I was like, okay. That was his first kind of definition. And women were abused. And then he did pull me aside. This is all like within 20 minutes. And he's like, and he goes, you know, how did you talk about this without people just thinking, you know, you were like crazy? Like, how, you know, why'd you do this? And I go, well, why did you do this? I mean, you know, I was 20. I was 20. You were 35. I was looking for God. You were going for something completely different. Right. I mean, you have to wrap your head around why did you do that and what was that for you? Totally different from me. I mean, I was like, I felt like we were really dumb, naive, and kind of like swept into this loving thing. You were going after something a little different. I go, how did you get into it? You know, it wasn't exactly the same because I was just the age difference. He was successful already. You know, we weren't really in our success yet. We were young kids. So
great question.
Yeah.
I think what I'm trying to say is like we could get away with being forgiven a little easier, like our dissidents, than maybe if we were all like in our 40s doing it. Although some of us were in our 40s doing it and 50s. I'm just saying that was my only difference is like, well, I mean, nothing wrong with what you did, but you just have to figure out how you got into it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Which is, I think, part of what we all have had to do is like, what were we looking for?
Which is where the knowledge is too.
It is. It's not the same for everyone. It's not. I thought it was. I thought we were all there in our group for the same thing. And
well, what's the same is that it's fulfilling a value or fulfilling a purpose for everybody, or in some cases,
you're gaining something.
Yeah. Or in some cases, like a void. Like if you didn't have a family growing up and then you come into this and you're like, oh my God, this is the family I've always wanted. Or, you know, feeling like an outsider and then you're feeling accepted.
And those things are so powerful, the family feeling, because even though I know we kind of say that lightly, but when I got into this group, literally like a day after my mother was hysterical, it was so lovely to be around non-judging people who eventually we would tell everything. We all knew each other's life story. Mm-hmm. We never judge each other. So that's what we want family to be. Don't we wish we could talk to our mother and our father and our sister without them saying, you're not being the person I want you to be, you know? When you're with other people who don't have that condition on you, it's much more attractive and you're getting the same nourishment that you would want from your family.
I can't even tell you how many people describe their groups when things were good, when they were still enamored, they call it their chosen family. And we even said that in the group. I just enrolled this filmmaker from LA. He's totally family. He's so family. You're going to love him. Like that's what we would say too.
Right.
Like, and we felt that legitimately. Didn't we, Nip?
Mm-hmm. And that's okay. I think that's the validity to that. You know, there's a spirit, there's a connection that we all, it's, you know, we don't always have it all in one person or one family. We can't expect that from a family.
100%. We tell our stories. We change the world. A Little Bit Culty is proud to support the hashtag I Got Out project, which empowers survivors of cultic abuse to share their stories online as a catalyst for education, prevention, and healing. Learn more about the hashtag #IGotOut movement and find resources at igotout.org.
The moment in Hawaii when you tracked him down, what that was like for you?
That was a very tense moment for all different reasons. I mean, it ended up in the film. We shot that in 2015, right? A year before the film was out. And it was not the last thing I was filming. I was undercover there hiding from him. We had a lot of ways of following him so that we could show up on the beach by accident and have an accidental encounter with glasses that were like these, with a camera, you know, an audio. And that was my plan for a year and a half. I was planning on this amazing conversation, eye to eye with him, while he still trusted me, because I hadn't done anything negative, and ask him why? Just come on, lie to me. The whole day went wrong. The 3 hours before we were supposed to leave, all of our sunglasses weren't working. None of the glasses were working. None of the cameras were working.
Wow.
So, and we worked on it for 3 hours. It was a Sunday. It was the last day we were going to see him. We know he was going to the beach. I had my cinematographer. I had my troop with me. And all of a sudden, we get a signal that he's leaving. So we're like, oh my God, we got to go. So we follow him to the beach. The glasses weren't working. I'm like, I'm not going to go say hello to him because I have no desire to see him. I'm only doing this for this moment to capture this because I want to capture him on film. And they go, well, then she goes, why don't you just put your iPhone in your pocket? I'm like, I'm not going to put my iPhone in my pocket. She goes, yeah, just drop it in your pocket. I'm like, I don't want a vertical image. Plus, I have been waiting for this moment forever, you know? She goes, just do it. So I tore a hole in my shirt. I taped this thing on vertically. Yeah, vertically on my chest. And I had a hole in my shirt. And that's why I was super nervous. I was wired. I walked out there. And the first thing my feeling was, is he looked at me and he looked down at my chest with this little camera sticking out. And I thought, well, there it goes. There goes my secret film. There goes my secret camera. Yeah. There goes my everything.
Wow.
And I go, just get out of here. This is not what you wanted to do. This isn't what you want. You don't want to be here. I'm not here to apologize. I'm not here to hit him. I'm not here to do anything. I just want to ask him some questions, you know, and have him tell me the way that he used to lie to me. I want him to lie to me again, right? So the audience can see what it's like to have a narcissist just lie to you right to your eyes. Act. Yeah. So I didn't get that shot. Instead, I got this low angle of his eyeball. So I was like so furious. I got home. I was like, hey, we're not using that footage. I just got out of there as fast as I could. I go, no one's ever going to see this footage. So we got home back here. We're cutting the film. And I kept going, I'm going back. Cause he doesn't know I'm making the movie yet. They go, this is fine. Just use what you have. So we cut it together this way because it really is unresolvable. There really is no resolve in this conflict.
Right.
There isn't any way. There isn't anything we could say to a narcissist that's going to make him go, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to.
Yeah.
Nothing. And so that was the ending. And it was great to watch it at Sundance on big screens because his eyeball ends up in like the far left corner of the screen. And there's palm trees over here. It's like not my shot, I imagine. And the whole audience is like this.
Yeah.
Like looking up at the eyeball. And I was like, wow, I go, that's so powerful. Just to see how much we wanted to see him, but you know, how they had to go look at him and how it was holding their attention, you know, at that time. And the movie was so pin dropping. So it all worked out.
It did.
People thought I was supposed to hit him. They thought, why didn't you hit him? I was like, God, if you only knew my day. It wasn't going to be hitting
I mean,
him.
Like any survivor of anything would look at that moment. And I mean, I know I certainly have dreams where I confront the leadership and there's sometimes physical violence. Usually it's, I'm like, what the fuck, you know? And so in some ways I knew that you were nervous. I didn't know the whole backstory why, but I, you know, projected that of course, but in some ways it couldn't have been better because you caught him saying some fucking bullshit about good and bad and being the best and also doing the eye gazing. He was trying to do it to you, I thought.
Even if I really had that conversation or you had that conversation,
you can't.
With this type of person who's not only a narcissist, he's also my therapist for 20 years. He thinks he knows me better than I know myself. When I was leaving, when I did finally see him, like I made a movie before I left the group back in the day, I showed it and he wasn't in it, but he wanted to see it. And it was like the last day before I was leaving, I was on the beach. He goes, you aren't returning my calls. And I'm like, I didn't say goodbye. I didn't say anything to him. And he goes, are you afraid I'm going to tell you what to do? And I go, yeah. He goes, that's just your mother. And I go, no, Andreas. I go, that's you.
Oh, good.
I go, that is you. Not my mother. It's you.
Hey, culty listeners, lovers of cult-busting content. ALB Sears, Culty Kids. We've gotten a lot of requests to put up a link where people can throw some funds up behind the podcast and help support what Little Bit Culty is doing. And you know what? That's a great idea. Thank you for that. And as we've gotten to know other podcasters and learn more about this whole podcast thing, we've been learning that it takes a whole lot of different resources and different sources of revenue and listener support to keep it rolling. Sponsorships and ads and the occasional appeal to amazeballs listeners like you. That's why we added a way for anyone who wants to support the show to do exactly that. You can go to alittlebitculty.com/support or the link in our Instagram bio, or smash that link in our show notes to make a one-time contribution or a recurring one. We will pay your support forward with a galactic level of love and light and healing resources, of course. Again, it's alittlebitculty.com/support or check out the link in our Instagram bios. Next up, we really got to figure out what to call you, our listenership. ALBC Nation? Flying Monkeys? We're going to have to workshop that. Thanks, guys.
You don't really want to go up to battle with those kind of fucking bullshit mind games. If you listen to that podcast when he tells those people he's trespassing on their property in Hawaii, and he tells them, oh, you look so frustrated and upset. That's gaslighting someone. You're not acknowledging their feelings. You're ignoring their feelings, and you're trying to make them feel wrong. Right. So yeah, I didn't want to have that conversation. None of our friends do want to have that conversation with them.
You can't.
That's exactly how I feel. I totally agree with that. When people say, if there's anything you would say to Keith right now, it's like, I'd walk right by him. What's the point?
It really is. What the point?
What's the point?
Unless they were really wanting.
Totally agree, Will.
That is a good reminder. I'm going to make sure that it's in our show notes, the link to My Favorite Murder, where they talk about how some people confronted Michelle Andreas Francesco Bermuda Bahamas, whatever his name is. They confronted him in Hawaii, because that for me was like, I got to live vicariously through that moment, even though it wasn't my cult leader. It was yours.
I mean, he's still out there doing it, huh?
He is still out there finding. Yeah. But I have to say something for you guys real quick, because you guys are using your voice now to do what you're doing. And you're talking about this in a way you never could have when you were in the group. You never could have when you were a week out of the group even. And so when I had that moment in the film and I said, I really wasn't going to waste my voice on this little man, but I had my voice back and I made the movie. And that really what I was saying, I go, I didn't have a voice, but I go, I do have a voice. You know, and I had my sister say, fuck you for me. She's like, fuck you. She says it for me. Thank you. I don't have to say that. I don't even say that, but I make a movie. It's the same thing you guys are doing. You are making awareness of it. It's like Super Size Me. You know, that movie made more changes in McDonald's than all the lawsuits.
Wow.
Right?
Right. Education.
Education, exposing it. It helps people, makes people change and helps people give choice. So.
Definitely more powerful. Thank you. It's definitely more powerful than hitting somebody.
Well, yeah, true. Very true. Thank you for your film. And I'm so glad I got to watch it another time, because I got so much out of it a second time.
Yes.
Thanks, you guys. Thanks for bringing it up.
And before we wrap, I have one more question. I noticed that Jared Leto is a producer, and he since started something that some say might be a cult. Do you know anything about this? Did you not know about this?
No. I know he's fascinated with the subject. I know he's always been fascinated with cult leaders, thinking wanting to play one maybe. We kind of thought he might want to play this Andreas at some point, you know, because he liked fascinating cult leader type characters. So you're saying that in his real life, he's...
Well, listen, I haven't done a deep dive. It's been brought to our... Because people email us all the time, do this, do that episode, like do this group. Like, and people have said, are you going to do one on Jared Leto? And I was like, I haven't deep dived. I've did a little bit of research. Apparently, I can't tell if it's like a tongue-in-cheek thing, like come to this retreat and I'm going to be your leader. And there's a lot of white robes and he's a musician. And I know he played also what's his name? The guy who started... WeWork.
Adam Newman.
He played Adam Newman.
Yeah, I'm watching that right now.
Right. So like, I don't know if this is him just like a media stunt, like a jokey thing or like a legit thing. So I don't know. I just thought maybe you might, because he was your producer.
I don't know him that well.
Okay. Well, then bookmark that and we'll
go. I'll do a deep dive. I know people who do though. I can definitely make a phone call.
Perfect. And if he wants to come on our podcast, we'll totally interview him. Will, I love you and your film. It is such a service, true service, and not to any master, but to actual humanity.
Yep.
So thank you.
You know, we all learned one way not to do it, and it pointed us all in a direction of how to do it, I think. So that's what I think we can all be grateful for.
That's right. I learned a lot of things not to do. That's right.
100%. Keep in touch, please, Will. Let us know about your upcoming projects, and we adore you. Thank you so much.
I appreciate that.
Thank you, Will.
Thank you, guys.
Imagine yourself walking into a forest. You can see the path and the trees. High above you, the air is crisp
You are walking towards your happy place. Allegedly, allegedly. Say it with me. Anything said here on this podcast about alleged cults, alleged MLM schemes, alleged douchebaggery, mindfuckery, criminality, spiritual fraud, or the like, is offered purely as commentary. Because the views and opinions expressed on A Little Bit Culty do not necessarily reflect on official policy or position of the podcast. And any content provided by our guests, bloggers, sponsors, or authors are their opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, group, club, organization, business individual, anyone, or anything. So just let these words drift into your mind without needing to focus on any of them. You are great. You are capable. You deserve to be happy. Nobody's mad at you, unless you're actually a narcissistic, culty criminal. If that's you, cut that shit out. Don't be a fuckwad. But if that's not you, again, you are great. You are capable. You deserve to be happy. A Little Bit Culty loves you.
Thanks, everybody, for this special two-parter with Will Allen. And we are going to put the link for the episode of My Favorite Murder, which has the full letter from somebody who did run into Jaime and some of his loyal followers out in Hawaii. I really recommend listening to it. It's just the first 5 minutes of the episode. It just really goes to show how, even with all this information out there, all of these testimonials, all of these people saying, this happened to me, that people refuse to look at it and stay in. It's crazy. I mean, it's not crazy because we used to have that.
Well, there is an explanation right for it, Sarah.
Do you have an explanation?
Which is, I think, is a beautiful segue.
Oh, wow. I'd love to hear that explanation. It
goes a little something like this.
Okay. Are you back in the Ned Flanders voice?
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
That guy's dead forever. For those of you who don't know, there's a guy named Leon Festinger, and he's the guy who coined the term cognitive dissidence back in, the 50s. And he has a couple explanations as to why this phenomena exists and why people sometimes get radicalized or double down. And the precursors of it normally stem from the people are aware that they don't have evidence to stand on, right? And they know that the public perception, and I think this is the big one, they have a fear of, looking ridiculous. So that was ours when we were leaving. Like, that was one of the first things I was like, oh shit, we got fucking duped. I got to eat my crow, right? And so for people who are at this kind of stalemate or at this part in their life, they get why the public perception is the way that it is, and they get why people see it, and they avoid all the questions that expose that, right? So they refuse to put themselves in a position where they're not curating it and creating the narrative or even rewriting it at its worst. And there's three things that cause that. There's sharing failure and sunk cost fallacy, and then there's sharing hardships. So with sharing failure, perfect examples is the one we did on Fellowship of Friends with Richard Burton, right? When they have a doomsday scenario and they have a date, normally you would think that when the date comes and goes and you're still alive, that people will go, shit, that was dumb. But no, it actually gets them to double down, right? And the bonds increase after they share the failure. It causes them to double down or triple down on their viewpoint in fear of public embarrassment.
Didn't he also infiltrate that particular group?
Well, no. Leon Festinger did one in the 50s. He didn't infiltrate Fellowship of Friends. I'm just giving an example of the ones that we've described. So, for example, sex acts, too, are a great way to humiliate people so that if they go against their narrative, they have to own that they were humiliated sexually. And that's a big one. It can happen to men and women. In a lot of our interviews, even in our scenario with the blowjob scenario.
You might want to summarize what that is for somebody who doesn't know the blowjob scenario.
So,
what was that about?
When Van Dusch got everyone down to Mexico.
Before he was arrested.
He had what's called a recommitment ceremony. And this is what Lauren testified in court, that, there was a blowjob ceremony where eight women were going to have the blowjob based on the book of Das or whatever it was. But my point is that they do these things because after you're humiliated sexually, you're not going to turn on the person that got you to do it. You're sharing in the failure. So you have this group of people that are fear of being wrong and publicly embarrassed. And all they have is that faith in this thing that they've committed to because there's no real foundation to stand on it, or it leads to kind of a radicalization in their belief system or what looks to it. What another precursor, another symptom of that is what I've noticed is their behavior gets way more dogmatic and vitriolic. What goes on in order to maintain their self-image is that their morality is taking a backseat to their dogma. And so they're fighting to keep their self-image
a lot in this. And, you know, look, we all have these in petty fights in our lives, but this is one on a grand scale because, you know, they feel like it's tooth and nail when really all they have to do is pivot, eat their crow, and they're free of that prison of thinking, which leads us to the sunk cost fallacy. So this is when you've invested all your time, emotions into something, and you can't admit that you wasted your time and resources on something. So they have to make up something of value where there is none. And you see this kind of in relationships with people. You see, oh yeah, he's, you know, a good dad, or, you know, she's a good mom, or, but they're really in a relationship that probably isn't healthy, but they have to make up the value to justify. I think we had a module where it talked about buying back the dollar. You can even see it in stock investments. Well, I invested so much time and resource in the stock, I have to keep it in the hopes that it goes up, and they're inventing value.
Like waiting at the elevator. Like after you've waited for a certain amount of time, you wasted so much time, you don't want to leave because...
You don't want to take the stairs.
Take the stairs because like it's going to come any moment. I'm going to get my value any minute.
Although I think there's a little bit more at stake than...
Yeah, but what I'm saying is it's like it's everywhere. It's like in little things with the elevator. It's in huge things like not being able to or willing to admit you're part of something bad. You can't go there in your brain because...
Right.
What does that mean about you if you missed all the red flags? Right. And
well, what does it mean that you did with your life?
We had that too. Like, do you remember when a group of people left NXIVM in 2009? And first of all, we didn't even speak to them about why they left because they were being dishonorable.
No, if you can't relate to this, if you can't relate to this, then you're purposely not trying to relate to it.
A lot of people left. And then the group that was still loyal to NXIVM, this is 2009, and we were part of that. We felt righteous and we were rewarded.
Oh,
we were noble for our loyalty, and we all got promoted, and everyone, you know, we got access to things we didn't have access before. They had separated the wheat from the chaff, you know?
Yeah. So the third one is sharing hardships. And I think this is the one that you should explain, because I think this is what the branding ceremony was.
It's the basis of trauma bonding. And truthfully, and I've said this in my book, I think that the people I was branded with, the women, weren't my close friends. They weren't the people that I was already tight with in NXIVM. It was kind of random. And afterwards, I felt totally bonded in a way that I never would have imagined before. I felt like, you know, these are my sisters. I would go through anything for them. I think Van Dusch did that on purpose, 100%.
It also increases your loyalty. I mean, like Lauren, I think, you know, this is where Lauren was brave and she did the right thing, because I think she, when she got on the stand, she really nailed this. But it created tighter bonds between you guys.
So if you had that and the sunk cost fallacy and the failure.
Exactly. And 12 years and your livelihood caught up into it. It's quite a pivot. And they think you're the one with weak character.
I just wasn't radicalized.
Right. That's the adhesive to this radicalization, is you have sharing of failure, sunk cost fallacy, and sharing of hardships.
Yep. If you go back and watch Holy Hell or listen to that first 5 minutes of My Favorite Murder, you can kind of understand why people would stay loyal to somebody like Jaime Gomez or anybody, because of what it means about you as a person. So please be compassionate when people don't wake up as quickly as you hope they would. And speaking of which, Nippy and I realized that we've actually been awake now.
All right.
Is what we call it. We've been out of NXIVM for 5 years. Yeah.
5 year anniversary. Well, anniversary. I mean,
well, May, June. We don't really have a specific date because it was kind of a clusterfuck of a month, but Nippy's birthday of 5 years ago, we were on our way to New York to blow shit up.
Yeah. And then June 1st, I went in and filed my formal complaint of you branded my fucking wife.
Was that the day I went to the FBI?
No, that was the day before.
So that whole week, so this is like, you know, 5 years ago, you know, things were unraveling. We still didn't know how bad it was, but we knew that we were out and we knew that we had to figure out how to, I don't even think we knew that we were going to actively dismantle things at that point. We just knew that we were out.
That was when the fight or flight started. I was like, oh my God.
It's like New Year's. You know, New Year's is a time for reflection on how was the year and did I accomplish my goals and what am I focusing on for this new year? So 5 years is at least for us, has been a really, it's been a contemplative time.
You know, especially from where we thought we might be 5 years from that date.
We've got these two beautiful boys. Yeah. We have a thriving marriage. We have an incredibly exciting and meaningful now career in this podcast, which is crazy how it's gone from, you know, a hobby to a full-time thing.
And we're actually achieving what we set out to do when we were young, naive pups in our 20s.
Oh, the little pup named Nippy.
Well, think about it. I mean, it wasn't stupidity, it was naivety.
Yeah, and idealism.
Yeah, and those are all human things. To turn such a negative scenario into a positive has been a journey, and it's been really fun.
And how great to have, you know, this episode with Will Allen as part of our 5-year anniversary celebration, because he was there.
Right.
with his film right. at the beginning.
Yeah, that's right. I'd say about 5 years ago this week we'd be watching Holy Hell going, oh shit.
Could you imagine somebody, a little angel coming down, you're going to be okay. And in 5 years, you're going to be interviewing the director of this film on your podcast. That would have been weird.
That would have been bizarre. You know, and he spent 22.
He spent much more time than we did.
He knows on a level that we probably don't.
I feel like we really got some extra nuggets from him, especially the part about the boundaries with the eyes. I found that really fascinating. Yeah.
Right.
You know, every episode, right? We learn so much. Like, how lucky are we that we get to have these conversations, share them with our audience. We get to learn. You all get to learn. And can I share a couple of tidbits of what's coming up?
Oh, geez.
Here we go. Here's some things. We are interviewing Dr. Natalie Feinblatt. She's a therapist, and we're going to really get some nuggets from her about what's the difference between PTSD and CPTSD, and share with you, our audience, some tangible tools on overcoming those things. We are interviewing an incredible specialist in narcissism. We felt like our episode with Dan Shaw was the tip of the iceberg, and we'll be talking to Dr. Romani. That's coming soon.
I can't wait for that one.
Yes, and there was so much response from The Deep End with Teal Swan that we decided to also interview the director and the producer. So stay tuned for that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to pick favorites. I'm so excited to share that we spent 2 hours with my personal hero in this space currently, Evan Rachel Wood.
Yeah. Also, you know, after reading some of this cognitive dissonance stuff, the Fessinger stuff, I think we should send it to her.
Yeah, I think she'd appreciate that.
I think it's very applicable.
So homework, if you haven't watched Phoenix Rising on HBO, please do that. That's your homework for this week. So that's a little summary of what's to come. And we thought we'd wrap up with some very, very special word salad from none other than Michelle / Jaime /
I'm going to do it as Jaime Gomez.
If you can't stand naked in front of your master, you can't stand naked in front of God.
Oh, come on now. That ain't even bullshit. That's horseshit.
Can this just be a thing that we do now?
What a way to get you naked.
If you can't stand naked before your master, how do you stand naked before God? I mean, that's such a good point. You have to stand naked.
I should say that to you, Sarah. If you can't stand naked in front of your husband.
I stand naked in front of you all the time.
If you can't do that, you can't stand naked in front of God.
But why do you even need to be naked in front of God?
Seriously, what's God up to? The fuck?
Oh my. On that note, thank you everybody for listening. Thank you for the support.
Jaime.
Thank you for the donations.
Fucking
thank
Jaime.
You for sharing our episodes. Jaime. Jaime's still Jaime. Living in Hawaii, by the way. And
bye, May.
Bye, May. See you next time. Bye, guys.
Sinking down to the depths of the ocean. I'm hanging on to the wind of my love. If I let go of it all, I could leave. But I know.
Let's keep the conversation going. We'll be back soon with more episodes of A Little Bit Culty with more experts and survivors. And sometimes experts who are survivors, as well as some familiar faces from The Vow from HBO. If you've got suggestions or questions on upcoming topics, find us on Instagram at A Little Bit Culty.
And for more background on what brought me here, my memoir, Scarred, The True Story of How I Escaped Nexium, the Cult That Bound My Life, is available on Amazon, Audible, and where most books are sold.
If you'd like to help us spread the word about A Little Bit Culty podcast, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe.
Seriously, like, take out their phone and tell them to press subscribe. Takes a second. We're also available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and every major listening app. And if you're listening on a smartphone, tap or swipe over the cover art of this podcast to find show notes and helpful resources.
You might also find some offers from our sponsors there. And when you support our sponsors, you help us keep this podcast going. Just don't be a little bit culty about it.
A Little Bit Culty is executive produced by me, your co-host, Sarah Edmondson, and Anthony Nippy Ames.
That's me.
Associate producer is Jess Tardy. Produced, edited, mixed, and mastered by Citizens of Sound. Our amazing theme song, Cultivated, is by John Bryant and co-written by Nigel Asselin. I'm Sarah Edmondson, and thanks for listening to A Little Bit Culty.